Chapter 12. It was unfortunate that Siegfried ever had the idea of delegating the bookkeeping to his brother, because Skeldale House had been passing through a period of peace, and I found it soothing. For nearly a fortnight there had hardly been a raised voice or an angry word, except for one unpleasant interlude, when Siegfried had come in and found his brother cycling along the passage. Tristan found all the rage and shouting quite incomprehensible. He had been given the job of setting the table, and it was a long way from kitchen to dining room. It seemed the most natural thing in the world to bring his bike in. Autumn had come with a sharpness in the air, and at night the log fire burned bright in the big room, sending shadows flickering over the graceful alcoves and up to the high carved ceiling. It was always a good time when the work of the day was through and the three of us lay back in the shabby armchairs and stretched our feet out to the blaze. Tristan was occupied with the Daily Telegraph crossword, which he did every night. Siegfried was reading, and I was dozing. It embarrassed me to be drawn into the crossword. Siegfried could usually make a contribution after a minute's thought, but Tristan could have the whole thing worked out while I wrestled with the first clue. The carpet round our feet was hidden by the dogs, all five of them, draped over each other in heavy breathing layers, and adding to the atmosphere of camaraderie and content. It seemed to me that a chill breath struck through the comfort of the room as Siegfried spoke. "Market day tomorrow, and the bills have just gone out. They'll be queuing up to give us their money, so I want you, Tristan, to devote the entire day to taking it from them. James and I are going to be very busy, so you'll be in sole charge. All you have to do is take their checks, give them a receipt, and enter their names in the receipt book. Now, do you think you can manage that without making a bloody hash of it?" I winced. It was the first discordant note for a long time, and it struck deep. "I think I might just about cope with that," Tristan replied, haughtily. "Good. Let's get to bed, then." But next day, it was easy to see that the assignment was right up Tristan's street. Stationed behind the desk, he took in the money in handfuls, and all the time he talked. But he did not talk at random. Each character got a personal approach. With the upright Methodist, it was the weather, the price of cows, and the activities of the village institute. The raffish type, with his cap on one side, exhaling fumes of market ale, got the latest stories which Tristan kept on the backs of envelopes, but with the ladies, he rose to his greatest heights. They were on his side from the first because of his innocent, boyish face, and when he turned the full blast of his charm on them, their surrender was complete. I was amazed at the giggles which came from behind the door. I was pleased the lad was doing well. Nothing was going wrong this time. Tristan was smug at lunchtime and cock-a-hoop at tea. Siegfried, too, was satisfied with the day's takings, which his brother presented to him in the form of a column of neat figures accurately totaled at the bottom. "Thank you, Tristan. Very efficient." All was sweetness. At the end of the day, I was in the yard, throwing the used bottles from the boot of my car into a bin. It had been a busy day, and I had accumulated a bigger-than-usual load of empties. Tristan came panting in from the garden. "Jim, I've lost the receipt book." "Always trying to pull my leg, always joking," I said. "Why don't you give your sense of humour a rest sometime?" I laughed heartily and sent a liniment bottle crashing among the others. He plucked at my sleeve. "I'm not joking, Jim, believe me. I really have lost the bloody thing." For once his sang-froid had deserted him. His eyes were wide, his face pale. "But it can't just have disappeared," I said. "It's bound to turn up." "It'll never turn up." Tristan wrung his hands and did a bit of pacing on the cobbles. "Do you know, I've spent about 2 hours searching for it. I've ransacked the house. It's gone, I tell you." "But it doesn't matter, does it? You'll have transferred all the names into the ledger." "That's just it. I haven't. I was going to do it tonight." "So that means that all the farmers who've been handing you money today are going to get the same bill next month." "Looks like it. I can't remember the names of more than 2 or 3 of them." I sat down heavily on the stone trough. "Then God help us all, especially you. These Yorkshire lads don't like parting with their brass once, but when you ask them to do it twice, oh, brother." Another thought struck me, and I said with a touch of cruelty, "And how about Siegfried? Have you told him yet?" A spasm crossed Tristan's face. "No, he's just come in. I'm going to do it now." He squared his shoulders and strode from the yard. I decided not to follow him to the house. I didn't feel strong enough for the scene that was bound to follow. Instead, I went out into the back lane and ran behind the house to the marketplace, where the lighted entrance of the Drover's Arms beckoned in the dusk. I was sitting behind a pint when Tristan came in, looking as though somebody had just drained half a gallon of blood from him. "How did it go?" I asked. "Oh, the usual, you know. Bit worse this time, maybe. But I can tell you this, Jim. I'm not looking forward to a month from today." The receipt book was never found. And a month later, all the bills were sent out again, timed, as usual, to arrive on market day morning.